I like the weird and the wonderful. I like going and getting lost and sleeping in the rain and sitting with myself. And the reason it makes me emotional is because I recognize how many people are so like thinking they're not allowed to go outside the box and try, which is a big part of what I do now in my world of adult industry, is I take people on my own exploration journey because I don't get to do that in society safely. And then I get to have sexual experiences that I probably wouldn't ever have in my life without this world for me. But the thing is that for the first time in my entire life, I'm really happy with me. I walked into therapy and she said, "What feels like the impossible?" And I said, "To like myself."
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to This Is Powerful with me, Paul Scofield. In this podcast, I speak to some incredible people about mindset, mental health, addiction, and recovery. And I share my own journey throughout these conversations. So whether you're on your own path of self-discovery, recovery, or transformation, inspired by human stories of mental resilience, or supporting someone who is struggling with addiction, make sure you follow and subscribe to This Is Powerful. There'll be a new episode every Thursday. In these episodes, we will be talking about drug and alcohol misuse, suicide, sexual abuse, and some other heavy topics. So please take care when listening. Today, we have a great guest, Michaela, professionally known as Kayla Wild. Michaela has been clean and sober for 11 years and currently works in the adult industry. Going from a hostile upbringing to living in a woman's refuge to now being a homeowner and looking after her son as a single parent, giving him the upbringing that she never had. We talk about the power of honesty and her dream of being a psychotherapist to those in the sex industry. We have a real candid conversation and Michaela actually has quite a surprising truth bomb. Hi, Michaela. Welcome to This Is Powerful.
Thank you.
I'm interested in the beginning. Where are you from and how was your upbringing before we get into your current career?
I'm from Essex. And
it's a big place.
Yes, yes. Although it's like scary to say like exactly where I am. But yeah, just outside of London. I didn't realise at the time until later on in recovery, but I definitely grew up in an alcoholic household. I think I lived, you know, when you hear people say my first addiction was fantasy.
Yeah.
I definitely relate to that. So this like narrative that I had a dad who would kill for me, like this big protector, you know, when actually at home there was a lot of violence going on. There was lots of drinking going on. I was the baby. So I've got a sibling, a sister who's 13 years older than me, a brother who's 10 years older than me.
So quite a gap.
Yeah, yeah. I was often told that I wasn't wanted. My mum didn't want me, but apparently my dad wanted another girl. So there was all these like messages, which then as a child, I realise now how I internalise them. Like not wanted, not worthy, always like not enough, but too much. All these confusing, contradictory messages I had within. But because of the fantasy, it took me quite a while in recovery and therapy to deconstruct the narratives that I'd created.
Where did you used to go?
Big imaginary worlds. I had a very, very big imagination, which then for a period of time was dangerous because if I didn't have an awareness around it, it could go somewhere really dark, gotcha. Which it did. Getting in recovery and getting sober, I learned how to channel it to my benefit. So I change how I look at things rather than good, bad, right, wrong, because then I'm thinking what my mum thinks. I had to learn how to think for myself and trust myself and give myself permission to be allowed to have my own thoughts and my own beliefs. So now the way I do it is I go, right, Kayla, what's the next effective thing for you? What's the next healthy thing for you? Then I can operate from a better space that feels like it's from me than from someone else's narratives that I've adopted. But it took me a long time to wake up from all of that.
It would take you a long time. And that's huge, isn't it? To get your agency back so you know what you're doing and talk to yourself.
I'd never had it.
How was school, early school? If you had to, I mean, it's hard to function. There's lots of people we know listen to this that have similar parents, and it's hard to function and be present in school, isn't it? How was that for you?
I was actually a really good girl.
Was you?
Yeah.
Wow.
I couldn't wait to get in to do my arithmetics and my spelling. I'm not going to lie. I was a proper like little geek. I loved English. I loved reading. I guess, again, fantasy.
Probably a healthy one though.
Yeah. And as a small child in primary, I loved primary because my primary school was really small and it was in a forest. And like, I remember the head teacher saying I was a star and this, and I was very quiet and shy until I did one show once and I came alive. And I remember thinking, oh, I love it. Like, it gives me goosebumps now. And I got called a star, and I remember feeling like quite special in that moment and
that
thinking,
resonates.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, I think I've found something here. And I remember doing one thing wrong at primary, right? And I had, some kid had told me, right, get this stone and engrave this door. And it was like, we were doing a story of like, I was this little kid and inviting people to my party, right? God knows why this is coming to me, but anyway. And I'm engraving this door and I got really told off. And I remember I had to face the wall, this brick wall of the school, and I wasn't allowed to move. And I remember like dying inside that I had been a bad girl. So I grew up very much with the narrative that people's happiness relied on me being good. This is why it took me so long.
So much pressure.
Yes, so much. Like, the weight of responsibility on an emotional level that I had, when I look back at it now, I can still feel now the effects that has on me day to day. I have to pep talk myself through every day, you know, and everyone would think, oh, but you're so confident and you're so extroverted. And I'm like, if you knew what I'm doing internally, because I could be talking here and I've got a narrative, you're really annoying, you're really this, you're really that, you're really that. And I have to go, you're doing a good job, darling. And then during that, I'm having a conversation.
Yeah. It's amazing that you can talk to yourself, to soothe yourself, right? And
yeah, definitely learn how to be my own friend.
How was it when you left school?
So things went downhill for me at about year 9. So I was about 13. During secondary school, that's when all the good grades and stuff like that, I was always told in like year 7, oh, she could do A star, A levels now and get an A star. Then I went completely downhill and I'd got with a guy.
Right.
So I was 15 and I got with an older guy and I spent 6 years with that man who was obsessed. He was very controlling. I wasn't allowed my hair curly. I wasn't allowed to wear skirts. If I did anything he didn't like, he would lock me indoors and go out, drag me by the hair, call me names. I remember getting my hair done once and having foils, you know, like when you're getting your hair highlighted in the bleach. And I remember him grabbing my hair and pulling me along and he threw me in a wardrobe. And I remember a hanger got caught in my hair and I was crying and he just sat there and pointed and laughed at me. And I spent 6 years with that guy. And ultimately, from trying to be this good girl for my family and then trying to be this good girl for this guy who was cheating and being abusive and stuff, it corroded me, you know, it totally corroded me. And then after that is when I really got into the swing of addiction. So when I left school, it was just a shame. I hadn't gone to my school prom because he didn't let me.
Was you drinking at that age? Have you tasted alcohol?
Yeah. So my household was one of those ones that are like, well, it's legal to let your kid drink inside from 5. I remember that. I remember my dummy being dipped in whiskey.
No way.
I used to suck my thumb for a long time. And my soothing thing was I would suck my thumb and I would needed your, like, skin. I needed like my mum's skin or my nan's or something. To like soothe me. So it was a thing where I always remember our holidays, not all of our holidays, it sounds a bit dramatic, but I really do remember we would all get in the car, drive to France, load the whole car up with drink, have a little dip in the sea quickly and then come back. We did, and that was normal. You know, our dining room had a huge room designated for alcohol. And if my mum and dad were going away and taking me, they would have to mark the bottles as well, because we'd come home and my siblings had drunk it all and put water in and stuff. So it was just a very, I look at it now and drink was just very normal.
Yeah.
There wasn't a night where my mum and dad didn't have a Bacardi and Coke or wine, and then that went on through dinner, through the night, every night. I didn't know a night where there wasn't.
Did you know that it was affecting you at the time?
No.
Because it was just normal.
Yeah, it was just normal. But I didn't want to talk to anyone really, because I think when aesthetically on the outside you do look okay and you're classed as a pretty little girl and it's very hard to share how you're feeling or what's going on for you, because I mean, we do live in a society where a lot of the time you're not believed, especially as a woman or as a girl, or it's all in your head, or you're crazy, or you're over the top, you're dramatic. Like, I could do something, what a man would be called as strategic, but I, as a woman, would be called calculated. Before I got in the job that I do now, I had gone through a lot in terms of family court, criminal cases, stuff like that, of things I had gone through, other traumas and experiences. And I noticed that through all my experiences, whether that was medical negligence, family court, because there's been a lot in life, on a systemic level, systemically, I noticed there was lack of prevention. There was where you have to constantly repeat yourself and re-traumatise yourself. You're signposted left, right and centre, and tons of websites have very good mission statements and state their values. But in the reality, it just all seemed like smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And so I delved into that. I did the Freedom Programme. I did the Alpha Vesta Programme. I did a life coaching diploma, a tantra diploma. I just wanted to learn. It gives me goosebumps, but like that, it makes me emotional. Like that little old me who was this, like, wanted to learn and loved knowledge, and this little geek, you know, like wanting to soak my brain up like a sponge, because I like to understand myself better. And I think if I can understand myself better, I can help others more in a more healthier way, rather than thinking I know or imposing. By knowing me, it broadens my internal space to hold space for others and liberate others. And that's what I tried to do.
After that horrendous relationship, what did you do? Because it sounds like you, you know, through that, you can't still find yourself. You're still like a prisoner of someone else's narrative.
I got out of that. At the time, I was studying. So I was, well, training. I went to the Erzang Academy in Islington and I did professional musical theatre. So I was doing that and they didn't like that. They didn't like me dancing. They didn't like my costumes. They didn't all of this stuff. And then there was parties and I was introduced to a broader community as such. And I love it. I mean, give me the flamboyancy, give me the drag queens, give me the gay clubs. I love it. But then I'm this like little homebody cooking casseroles. I'm such a paradox.
I don't think it's a paradox. No, I just think it's a broad horizon of skills.
I always say I just dance over the spectrum. Yeah. I've always tried to contort to fit in this one box. I'm a whole goddamn warehouse full of boxes. Do you know what I mean? And it's so incredible to be at a time of life where I give radical permission to them all, for them all to exist.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so when I was, I had this bigger community, I ended up getting out of that because they thought I was getting with some guy from college and all of this malarkey. Anyway, I managed to get out of that and then continued to get into more and more along the way. It took me probably until even being over 5 years clean and sober in recovery to break free from my addiction to abusive relationships.
It's incredible. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly profound, because it's hard to hear, because people would be like, well, if you saw you, why would you go out with someone like that?
Yeah.
What do you think you was trying to get from that?
Trying to save little me. Right. Most likely, when I look back now, might sound a bit cringy or woo-woo to some, but I can see the pattern. It's like in recovery, you know, in our 12-step stuff and you do an inventory, the amount of times inventory, what that highlights is patterns.
Yeah.
It's my wiring. And it's like, right, I want to change that. You know, like some certain things might have not been my fault, but as an adult, it's certainly my responsibility. I'm the only one that's going to really, at the core, save me with that power. Yeah. And so I was like, right, I can clearly see these patterns. I would then look at myself like a computer, like my brain, and the data that's come in and how I filtered that with my early experiences lens, and then made a conscious decision I was going to rewire that. And I was absolutely adamant and determined that I was going to do that, which I grafted for. I grafted to unlearn, rewire, relearn. All the re's, isn't it? The recover, yeah. The renew, the rebirth, the re-this. Yeah, yeah. I just read it all. I was like, read it all. Like, do you know what I mean? And that's essentially what I've done. And now I'm not thinking, oh, I'm there. Now I'm just really excited that I'm at a place where I actively make life delicious. I make it juicy. I make it fun now. I make it where I explore and discover more. And it's like, oh, what can I do up until my dying day? Do you know what I mean? Of learning, you know, yeah. It's so cool to be in that space now.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
If anyone's listening and they're stuck inside abusive relationships, it's very hard to change something which is a belief system or subconscious. How did you do it? I know you said use 12 steps, which is incredible for seeing patterns and help. Did you use it? Do you have a therapist?
Yes. So I did 4 years of trauma therapy. I did 18 months of EMDR.
Wow.
Which is tricky. And it tends to feel worse before it gets better.
So for those who don't know, what is EMDR?
Okay, so it's eye movement desensitization reprocessing. You know when I said, so I viewed my brain as a computer? It's data processing.
Yeah.
You know, this is like quantum physics stuff as far as I'm concerned. Do you know what I mean? And like what you did in the beginning was, there's these like 8 stages of it, and I had to create a safe space internally. So what I did, I was in like this empty beach, lilac skies, shabby chic beach house. That's where I am with little inner me. And she's cartwheeling. She's in the sea. She's eating all this food, and then she's panicking and she's going, but where's it coming from? And I'm going, don't worry, baby girl. You ain't got to worry about any of it. It'll just keep coming. You will be abundantly served. And I'm talking back to her. So that was my safe space. Amazing. So then during the therapies, when it got hard or tough, I could go back there internally with her. And it worked well for me, because I'm not being funny. I'm very used to that imagination from the very beginning anyway. Yeah, yeah. So it's
which you turned into an asset.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every piece of pain I have, I've turned into power. And I'm adamant about doing that. I remember listening to a podcast with Oprah and Michael Beckwith, and he was like, actively participate in your evolving. And it gives me goosebumps.
He's great, Michael Beckwith. Yes. How did alcohol and drugs take a part? When did you start to notice that was getting heavy early on?
I had finished college. I was dancing. I ended up, look, the sad thing was, I wanted to be really taken seriously as an actress. But then what once was the thing that people would think I was all together, well, then I'm judged and I'm looked at as the prisoner's wife, or the this or the that, or the dumb bimbo, you know? And it's like, if I could have like had a go at like being in the National and like doing something like really where I could really get my teeth in it, I would have adored it. But it's just, it's a lot of rejection, isn't it? That world, which I was fine with, but yeah, just the not being taken very seriously. And I ended up needing to earn, and I was like a promo girl by day, a podium dancer by night. And then it got to places I needed money, and I worked at Spearmint Rhino stripping.
Did you?
Yeah.
No way.
I had to pay for a car and I wanted to pay it off, and I auditioned, and then they gave me a night spot straight away. And I've only recently in the past few years really discussed that I did that. But
how was that? Hard work?
Yeah, and I wasn't good at it. I'm a sensitive little Sally. I mean, I'm good at the dancing and stick on Rihanna and I will grind that pole, do you know what I mean? But ultimately, what it is really all about. I'm not good at pushing myself on people or sales. And I remember this one guy used to come in and he used to sit down. I think my name was Imogen, there was my like fake name. And he went to me, "Why are you here?" And I went, "I don't really know." And I was like, "I just need to like pay for this car." And I was dancing on the bar once. If you didn't get on the bar by a certain time when you were called, you'd get fined. So I've gone to the bar. Oh, there's
fined?
Yeah. You paid a house fee and everything to work there. That was, I think, 80 quid at the time.
No way.
All the way back then.
Wow.
That was taken out of your thing straight away.
Wow.
And then if you were called to certain parts to dance on and you were late, you'd be fined. And I'm on this bar and all these guys, these like Essex drug dealery guys that I had worked for one of their restaurants back in the day, all walked in and I just died. And I left that night and I never went back. I remember people racking up at the end of the night and stuff, or people offering this, that, and what. Yeah. But I was a real scaredy cat back then. I would literally work till 3-4 in the morning, drive home, sleep for a couple of hours, get up and do leafleting down Oxford Street again the next day. I wanted to work. And I feel like now I look back and I'm like, I wanted freedom. I didn't understand the freedom so much. But what I've realized now in my grand old age now is if I can have financial freedom, no one can abuse their power over me again. And that's what I was sick of. And that's been my whole aim. One, to keep my house. I don't ever want to live in a women's refuge again. Been there, done that. I didn't want anyone. I didn't want my son suffering in any way where I couldn't provide. And just a few years ago, it was tricky for me to even pay for a lunch at a soft lay. And I was just like, fuck this. Going for jobs, and it doesn't support the fact that I am a genuine, I ain't talking about a solo parent with a co-parent. I'm on my own with my mate down the road and my neighbour that helps me out genuinely, you know? And I was like, fuck this. I'm sick and tired of being scared. And that's then when I went for what I do now. And I understand I've probably completely gone off on a tangent. I think you did ask about when I noticed about the drink and the drugs, but
that was the question.
It was the question.
But you filled it in perfectly.
Welcome to my world and my brain. I get very passionate about everything. And
how old was your experiment, Rhino?
Oh my God. Very early 20s.
And you said that people would be racking up at the end of the night and stuff.
Yeah.
Were you drinking then to dance and that, or was you kind of just on the money?
I was kind of just on the money more then. I drunk from a young age, obviously. 13, I was puffing, drinking, pulling whiteys down the back of the corner shop, one of them, the embarrassing, throwing up,
but still,
you know.
Doing it.
Then it went on and on and on, managing, you know. Still drinking, but then it was more so, I remember that restaurant I had worked in was the first time I tried cocaine. And I remember one of my friends, she was from my dance college at the time, and I remember her proudly saying to me, "I knew I'd be the first person you'd do this with." And it was like really like proud. And I look back at it now, I'm like, what the, do you know what I mean? And I remember being like, I felt like I could breathe. All that trying to hold it together to be good and to fit and to not be weird and this and that. All just went, you know, it
and
genuinely.
Was that like an aha?
Yeah, I was like, baby, this is what I've been searching for my entire life. And then everything it gave me, it took away quick time. Because during that, I then got with another fella, this 6-foot skinhead from Canning Town, who had loads of money because his dad was really rich. I meet him when I was dancing at Faces. And this 6-foot Canning Town guy goes to me, "I'd marry you tomorrow." And there, in that moment of sniffing cocaine and someone finally choosing me, I thought I had worth. And I completely and utterly gave myself to this person because I thought I'd been chosen. I was finally worthy. Mm. Someone's proved it to me.
Makes sense and very sad at the same time.
But that person beat me up, always supplied me with drugs, but then didn't want me, wanted me to stop when he wanted to stop. He used to like, I swear to you, you know the weird things you do, like you're on your own at night and I'm trying to write a letter, or I'm sticking Jeremy Kyle on the laptop at 4 a.m, volume one, volume down, volume one, volume down. I'm running five baths. I'm changing my clothes five times. Mm. I'm sticking SIM cards behind microwaves. I'm deconstructing anything electronic. I started with ironing one shirt, you know, and then I've got the whole flat upside down. And then you don't know what to do with your time. So you're like, me, right? What, like, and women do that too, you know? And he would come out, right? See what I was doing. He would open the door of the flat and shout to everyone that I was this dirty weirdo. This is someone who, if you could see the search history on the computer, trust me, you want to talk about
projection.
If anyone remembers the website, YNC used to be all over that, right? And I look back now, but at the time, I think I was so used to believing and trusting in others and not myself. The man, no matter what the truth was of the experience, I then thought I was shit.
Yeah.
All the time, thought I was shit or not good enough. Or I've always felt like something was dirty or wrong or weird about me. And I've spent my life fundamentally trying to work that what that is out. You know, but escaped it in other ways. And with that, I then ended up in a women's refuge because...
From there,
that relationship, oh, it's all a long story, but I cut my wrist one night. He said he was going to tell my mum what I was doing. And that petrified me because my mum's probably the person I'm the most scared of. I've now been estranged for a couple of years, but at the time I then sliced myself with a razor and he strapped my arm up. He stuck me in the car. He chucked me in my mum and dad's house and said, you deal with her. And the first thing my mum said to me was, what have you done to make him so angry? The lovely misogyny patriarchal society that we live in, you know? And I'm like, this is why I think I'm so passionate about deconstructing loads of shit, you know, because them internalized messages nearly killed me. All of that. No one talking honest with me or real or authentically or from spaces that where they've critically thought or challenged. I was never allowed to do that. So I'm very passionate about my son having autonomy and being his own person and just supporting and guiding whoever he is or wants to become, you know. And from that moment, I was then there living with them. And one time I brought the car back like a half hour late or something. My mum had punched me in the face, split my lip open. My dad threw me out and I said, I don't even have a spare set of underwear. And he said, we don't care. And he took my key. And I knew that there was a women's refuge down the road because my sister had lived in it before. So I tried to find that. The abusive ex found me on the way as well. It's all just very weird. Anyway, yeah. I stayed on a sofa for 3 nights and then I lived in the refuge. If we had more time, I swear to you, the stories I could say about being like chased through Epping Forest and this and that, like mental. I feel like a cat who's had 9 lives.
Yeah.
And like I've been able to reinvent myself loads. And ultimately, after the refuge and going back to the abusive person as well, because they found out where I was and they would come and they would cry, come on, let's have a little party. You ain't telling an addict you're having a little party and they ain't coming. Mm. They're coming, whether they're getting beaten up or not, you know. Only few know that who really know addiction, don't they, you know?
Yeah.
And finally then, after all of that, there was just another day when I'm completely on my own. And I'm withdrawing and, oh, it's all a really long story, but I found CA online and went to my first meeting.
Did you know anybody there or you just looked for it?
Yeah, just looked for it. I didn't know where it was when I turned up to this car park. I was too scared to ask anyone because I thought they're going to know, you know. I remember thinking, what if I know anyone of this and that? I look like the corpse of Barbie, you know what I mean? And then like...
As probably most other people.
Yeah. And I remember there was 3 women at the back that felt quite maternal. That attracted me quite a lot.
Yeah.
I went and used one more time. And then I was in another flat of the same after parties always. And on my way back on the Sunday morning, feeling like I was transparent, that you could see through to my, like a stick of rock. And I just couldn't bear the humiliation anymore. And I just white flagged it and surrendered. And then sorted myself out that Sunday. And on Monday, the 28th of July, 2014, I went to Upshire.
Amazing.
And I've never drank or used since.
Once you started to go into recovery, what kept you there?
I think I got so addicted to recovery. I loved the relatability. I think it's that same old story where it's like, oh my God, you get it. I'm not on my own.
Yeah.
These are the same stories and the same feelings and this very similar experiences. And even if something was a yet, I still could relate to it. I think because there was a level of honesty within me that I could be. And I think that's always held me in good stead, is my honesty. No matter how uncomfortable it makes me or how vile I think about myself, about something I've done, I will be honest, even if deeply
it's
uncomfortable.
It's completely powerful.
Yeah.
It just cuts through everything.
Yeah.
And you won't go around in circles. If you're lying, manipulating something, you're just doing it to yourself, aren't you? So it cuts straight through the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I just got so, I don't know, I think I got addicted to going. I loved it. So I would like finish work or whatever. There was a gym downstairs, like this little old shoddy gym. I'd go in there, I'd go to the Tesco garage, buy myself a chicken Caesar meal deal, eat that for dinner, go to a meeting, work, meal deal, meeting, work, meal deal, meeting. Because everyone said about the 90-90 and things like that. And this is where being the good girl did still put me in good stead, because I wanted to be good.
Yeah.
I wanted to do it all right. And I don't slate any way in which I've tried or any approach in which I've done. I've done book studies. I've gone through the book in different ways and different approaches.
Just quickly for reference, for those who don't know, the book Michaela's referring to is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, written in the 30s.
Yes. And I've come to a realisation now of, you know, stick with the book, you know, but I don't slate any way I've done it. It's all got me to here. It's all given me realisations. It's all made me work out what I want to be and how I want to be. Because although I've seen lots of what I want to be in recovery, I've learnt a shit ton of what I don't want to be too. Yeah. That's the truth.
Which is really important.
Absolutely.
What is it that you've kept going? Why have you enjoyed recovery? What was attractive about it?
The profoundness of the release of the obsession. I was very aware of that when that happened. I threw myself into the 12-step work. I would go to NEA. I went to Al-Anon. I went to CODA. I tried SLA, AA, CA, NA, you know, I'll give it a good go. And I tried anything, as long as it didn't harm me or someone else. I just delved into things, you know. Yeah. I went to Buddhist temples. I went on a Christian retreat. I went and got baptized. I mean, I had a sword in the air shouting freedom, like I was Braveheart, burning my repentance.
Probably was at the
I was like
time.
Burning stuff in this wheelbarrow one night with a tiara on my head. Do you know what I mean? And I look back now and I think, what on earth? But this is... I like that. I like the weird and the wonderful. I like going and getting lost and sleeping in the rain and sitting with myself. And the reason it makes me emotional is because I recognize how many people are so like thinking they're not allowed to go outside the box and try, which is a big part of what I do now in my world of adult industry, is I take people on my own exploration journey, because I don't get to do that in society safely. This is what people don't realise. They want to judge me, a lot of people. I don't want to meet up with people I don't know off of apps and stuff, you know? With my world, I get to get references. I get to see their sexual health history. They give me a certificate that's within 2 weeks. We get to have boundary talks, consent talks, my do's and my don'ts. How are we going to do this? And then I get to have sexual experiences that I probably wouldn't ever have in my life without this world. For me.
Yeah.
Not for everyone, trust me. But for me, I'm a solo parent. I ain't got time to date or meet. It's not really something I have any desire for, to be quite honest. But the thing is that for the first time in my entire life, I'm really happy with me. I walked into therapy and she said, what feels like the impossible? And I said, to like myself. Genuinely did not know how the fluff anyone got there. People would go, oh, listen to your gut and self-care. I'm like, yeah, but how do you do it? How do you listen to your gut? Everything's really loud. And then I learned it's probably more the quiet voice and stuff. And I might have tons going on in there. That's why pen to paper is so magical, because it makes me slow.
Yeah.
Makes me see a little bit more. Having that safe person, to talk, safe space, to talk through things, to have my own revelations and realizations and work out me and what I want and what I want to create for the first time in my life.
You know, in the adult industry, prior to that, you're studying counseling psychology, right?
Yeah, I've been studying that while I've been in this as well.
How do you balance that? And how did you, what was the decision you made to go into the adult industry? How did that come about?
Everyone will probably want to say you're only an S worker because you're damaged or you're traumatized. That's very much a narrative. Even when I got into the world, the amount of people that assumed I'd relapsed, I had messages from like recovery people as well, thinking I had relapsed.
Wow.
Because I do S work. It's like, wow, I understand it, but no, you know.
It's a little bit of a judgy thing as well, because you've hired yourself so high up level, that you're making your own decisions.
Yeah.
And that works for you rather than you need to do something or you've slipped back into something.
Yeah. So. And like anything, I think the reason I've been able to maintain and stick is because of truth. Mm. Every time it veers off, I redirect my internal spotlight, the core, not the intellectual level, not even my heart level, but boom, down there. What that light, that core truth, for me. And now I've been able to access down there after all the years of trying. No one can take that away from me now.
It's hard work.
Yeah, hard graft.
And some people think they're there, but they're not there.
Yeah, and it's dark and it's messy and it's gunky, it's all, but it's beautiful and miraculous and whatnot.
If you're doing psychology and all the work you've done,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot,
mm-hmm.
and it's admirable,
mm-hmm.
what's the decision to go into adult?
One, I didn't want to lose my house. First and foremost, financially,
there
was no way that me on my own without help was going to be able to make the mortgage money, the bills, support my child on my own on one like normal income.
Yeah.
Impossible. Impossible. Every interview I went for did not permit for 6 weeks holidays off, half terms. I'm genuinely on my own.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that from...
It's my genuine
experience of life. And also I'm very passionate about being a present parent. I'm like fierce lioness. I mean, not, I don't believe overboard, but like I want to be there. I want to raise my kid. I don't want someone else raising my kid, you know? I really want to support him. I didn't want to miss any shows or assemblies. So ultimately I did kind of really need to work for myself. And the truth was what I recognized. Do you really want the truth? No man had ever in my life, and I'm no man hater, trust me, or anything like that, but no man in my life had ever had me climax. And I thought, why is this being for free on my part when I'm not actually getting any pleasure? I'm just here for what you want or need me to be. And that was my experience over and over again. Not once had I ever been asked, what do you like, Kayla?
Mm.
I've never been asked that. I've like just been demanded what I do, or I've been assaulted, or I've been told that anyway, the list goes on. I'd never had, people can believe it or not, I'd never had actually a very nice experience sexually or intimately. And I wanted to have that in my lifetime, especially with the tantra stuff. And the thing is, it's not so much I like sex, or it's not that at all, but I love being it. And I think a Western view of that is like, my view of it is life force. When I orgasm, honey, I manifest. I visualize my best freaking life. How can you get more potent energy than bliss? You know, and then I have unlocked things within me, which a woman's body can do that I would have never realized. And I have felt feelings that like I can't even describe. And how sad if I'd have got through life and not had that.
Yeah.
You know? And I, to be honest, I love giving joy as well. And why is sex classed as dirty and wrong and taboo? But most of you, unless you're asexual, will want it. in some court, some sort of capacity. Yeah, supply and demand. It's the longest living career on the planet, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And it's like, okay, I do love a challenge. And I like to challenge societal constructs, you know, and I'm not saying I'm going to change it all, but if I can make a little dent in these places, I'm happy to try. And yes, I'll be judged along the way, but why not? If sex is so captivating, why not use it for good?
Hmm.
Why not use it to draw people in and then talk on a level of authenticity, truth, psychology, honesty? I don't have to do it like everyone else does.
Is this how you do it on OnlyFans?
Yeah. A lot of pages are run by agencies, management, things like that. I run it all myself. I have three pages I run.
So you don't have to pay anyone commission and all that? Oh, okay.
No. So I do all my socials. I have to post every single day. I've got other adult platforms as well. So it's a lot, for
of
me
work
to do.
Yeah.
But I really care about it. And I care. I wouldn't want someone on there not talking like me. Or like talking just the usual, fine, but how I want it, I would rather be in the minority and a smaller creator earning slightly, not rather, I'm saying that's probably a bit martyrish, but I really do care about authenticity of
that's
my pages.
The point.
I do.
Yeah.
And I earn well enough, far better than I ever have done in my entire life.
And you can run this in between school run, school drop off.
Yeah.
Maybe at night, whatever, when you need to. Yeah,
and then when they're asleep, I can edit things, I can chat and da-da-da. It permits me to be parent and siren.
Yeah.
You know? And why not? The whole point is to integrate all parts of self.
It sounds common sense to me because I can hear how, bless you, how painful the upbringing's been, and I'm sure we've just skidded through it.
Yeah.
And scenarios that people probably couldn't understand. And the amount of suppression and cutting and it sounds like the relationships are absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
And you're not in it anywhere.
No.
None of you's there to flower and to live. So it sounds
that's
like
exactly it.
It's all come to fruition now.
Yeah. It's like never having that space to be nurtured, to be you. I think being a mother and a parent now, I'm so goddamn passionate about giving my child that fertile ground.
Mm.
You know, to become the garden, to help then like them see how, like it's far better, I think, than to be real and make your apologies along the way to your children than to try to pretend to be perfect, like minded, like this keeping appearances where it can be World War III indoors, the door knocks and they go, hello.
Yeah.
I found that creepy as fuck growing up.
Yeah.
And I ask a question, they go, for pity's sake, Michaela, shut up. No one talks.
Yeah.
Sweep under the carpet, ring in your neck by night, open the door to the neighbours, come in for a Bacardi and Coke and a game of Canasta. What the fuck? Do you know what I mean? Weird.
Just fake.
Fake. And I fuck up, but I make apologies and we chat and we talk things through. And I've got a kid who at 3 and a half was telling me, I just need a moment outside with my dinosaur. You know, like he's got the emotional intelligence of far any other most adult humans I know.
Which is powerful. You're giving him agency what you never had. So.
Agency. Yeah. Autonomy, agency, and an ability to explore, be open, and to not have to think he has to adopt my beliefs or inherit my ways, that he has permission and stuff, that he doesn't have to wake up in his 30s like me and waste all that time. I'm not slating it of my experience because I quite enjoy the fact that I've felt that. So now feeling this feels like even more heightened because it's like in that book, Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. Love it. Yeah. Changed my life. He's like, you wouldn't know what the hot tap felt like if you hadn't felt the cold. You know, like it's kind of like you've come from bliss, from love to come and have to experience yourself essentially of what you really are. And it can be painful down here, you know, but I've then been able to have and experience the both. And I find that really exciting.
Well, you're turning all the pain into power, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Like a transferable skill for your son, which is admirable.
Absolutely.
What are you going to do with your psychology qualification?
Yeah.
Will you still have to work, do you think, in doing OnlyFans and stuff?
Yeah. It's my only income. So I'll still work there. My goal is to smash it while my kids at primary as much as I can. Invest money as much as I can. If my dream would be to have like a women's resource centre for women and children to
Amazing.
Come to and not have to be signposted to a million places and be able to get a lot of needs met in one space. I might be dreaming there, but it would be a goal, like a dream of mine to have that. But ultimately smash that while he's in little school, come out of systems and go travel and explore if they'd like to do that with me. And in terms of the psychology and counselling, I wanted to make sure I earn enough that I could help women that were in the situation I once was. I didn't want to be charging big fees for counselling or like some decent, like real congruent therapy, you know. And to be able to give them what I feel like I would have needed at that time. So I earn enough that I can volunteer some counselling work or at least have a sliding scale to help other women. But then I would like to niche it into the next levels of 5 and 6 to degree into sex psychology. So then I've got the experience within the addiction. I've done integrative training. So I've trained in all the approaches and theories, and I like integrative because that suits me and my warehouse full of boxes, you know, of all the different and see what works for that person at whatever time. We're human and complex and all of that. So integrative work, but then to niche degree level down to sex psychology. So I can help all the addicts and sex workers and everyone in the trenches, because nothing shocks Kayla. Nothing shocks Kayla, especially in my world now, the things I see and hear and whatnot and do.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's people that need that.
If there's someone out there who's struggling either in an abusive relationship or with addiction, alcoholism, what's their first thing they should do?
A part of me like says about that key about that revolutionary key that I feel like I've clocked within, where it's like, please try and be a little bit nicer to yourself. But that came further down the line. I would probably, if I look at my own experience, mine was go to that meeting, that first meeting, you know, like that first point of call for like some help.
Yeah.
And yeah, I want to say all the nice stuff that's along the way and do that, but I don't think that would have been quite useful to me until further on in the journey, maybe. Yeah. Got to trust it all. So looking back at that first initial step is just that first step of
asking for help.
Yeah.
Michaela, thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
This is Powerful is brought to you by Stride Foundation. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please head over to www.stridefoundation.com, where you can find links to resources that may help. You can also donate. Please make a donation. It will help us bring to you more episodes. Please rate, follow, and subscribe to the show. Why? This will help the algorithm make us more visible to others who need help. And share this podcast with your family, friends. Head over to social media at Paul Scholfort and at @this_is_powerful. You'll get to see what's coming up and you can get in touch with us, because I love hearing about you. Thank you also to my beautiful wife, Dr. Federica Amati, the best producer, Shannon Delwich, to Eber Long, who does all the hard work in the background. Thank you also to Ria Musa and the rest of the team. Did you know also you can watch us on YouTube? Just search for This Is Powerful with me, Paul Scholfort. Hi, everybody. I'd really love to hear your views so that we can produce a podcast with the content that matters to you. It doesn't matter if you just joined us or if you've been listening from the start. We would love you to fill in the short listener feedback form, which you can find in the show notes. And let me know your thoughts on our podcast. It would really mean a lot. Thanks, guys.